Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. So this is a fundamental idea to Aristotelian virtue ethics. This is Aristotle's biggest contribution in ethics, I would say. I mean, he makes a lot of contributions. This is probably the biggest. This is like the game changer at his time, was thinking about these things in terms of a mean and two extremes. You remember when we looked at Plato? Plato had these virtues, and what were their opposites? Just single opposites, right? Wisdom, foolishness, courage. What's the opposite of that? Cowardice, right. Is it possible to go wrong in more than one way, though? Yeah, that's why Aristotle came. When he thinks about it, he thinks about it in terms of a mean, or another way of putting that is a middle. And the mean or the middle position is always with respect to something like an emotional response or type of action or some sort of goods or relationships. He talks in terms of emotions and actions, but he also, if you look at the virtues that he talks about, he's thinking in terms of relationships that we have with other people and the goods that we have in our life and what we do with those goods. So you've got some sort of subject matter, and going right with it, being in the mean position, is going to be virtue. And opposed to that are going to be two different vices. You can think of this like the Goldilocks story. You guys all remember the Goldilocks story, right? Bratty kid goes in and busts up a bear's place, doesn't get eaten by them, you know. She goes in first and eats the porridge, and one porridge is what?
Too hot.
And the other porridge is too cold, because Goldilocks is a picky kid. And one is just right. And she eats it all, right? And then she goes and she has, you know, she lays in the bed and she breaks the chair, and you remember all the story, right? Well, it's like that for Aristotle, except he's saying that it has to do with our dispositions, what we develop within ourselves, our character. There's a middle position that's just right. And we'll talk about the just right. There's more to it than just being in the middle. There's some other qualifiers too, but let's first focus on that. So how many different major ways can you go wrong? You can have too much, and that's what he calls excess, right? And you can have too little. That's what he calls deficiency, and then just right. So now let's think about some particular examples. This will help us wrap our head around it. Let's think about temperance again, moderation, bodily appetites. Let's take food. Is there a right amount of food to eat for you in the given situation that you're in? Yeah.
I mean, it varies on the person, but if you eat too much, then you risk run the risk of becoming obese. If you eat too little, you end up with an eating disorder. But if you're somewhere in the middle, then you'll be, you know, like an average person.
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it. And if you do end up over here and you say, I'm getting too fat, I got to stop this, it's not so easy as just saying, okay, I'm done eating, because you've now built up this craving for having more food. And if you develop, say, anorexia, which would be a pretty extreme case of this, of self-deprivation, is it easy for somebody in that situation to say, okay, I'm going to turn it off now, and now I'm going to eat healthy? No, because it's become part of their being. It's become part of who they are. Quite often, it's reinforced by the relationships that they're in, too. You're right. Eating healthy would be eating the right amount for you. And you're half the size of me, so you shouldn't eat as much as I should. I shouldn't eat as much as I do eat. You can look at me and tell that I eat too much, and I don't exercise enough. Is there a right amount based on the amount of activity you have? If I'm a college professor, and some of you are quite active, some of you are doing jobs that are much more physically demanding. This is about as tough as it gets for me. It's walking around, right? Running the chalk on the board. That's not burning a lot of calories. I should probably eat less than somebody else who's doing a very physically demanding job. Reason determines that. What else could determine that? Well, what's going on if somebody deprives themselves of food? That's probably not reason. It's probably not, you know, practical reason figuring out the best thing for the person deciding that. That's probably some desire, some other thing. It may bring reason into it. There may be a certain kind of rationality to it. Usually there's some kind of logic, but it's not fully rational. What about eating too much? We often rationalize eating too much, don't we? You know, my biggest problem is snacks at night, mm-hmm. you know? Because, you know, there's no dumber time to eat anything. We like to have popcorn, you know, because popcorn is low calorie. But, you know, you put butter on it, now it's no longer low calories. And if you're just going to let it sit in your stomach all night, you're not actually burning any of those calories off. So it doesn't really help you. Can you rationalize that? Can you come up with excuses that seem quite reasonable at the time for why you ought to do that? Oh, sure. That's easy to do. Is that real rationality at work the way it would be in the virtue? No. It's kind of a facsimile of rationality. It's really desire that's driving you. Badly ordered desires. Let's say we take another example. Instead of doing courage, because I do that an awful lot, let's take generosity. Generosity would be the virtue, the middle position. And the generous person gives the right amount. Can you give too little to other people? What do we call a person who doesn't give to other people? Stingy, yeah. Stingy, skinflint. We have miser, you know, different words for it. And then it could be money. It could also be, here's an example, sponging off of people and never, you know, picking up the bill, never buying the round of drinks, always, you know, waiting for somebody else to do that, you know, always going off to the bathroom when the bill comes to the table. That would be over here too, wouldn't it? Could be in terms of time, the amount of time that you're willing to give to people. Maybe that if you're in certain relationships, you should give a certain amount of time to people, and if you're giving less, you're being kind of stingy with your time, you're not being generous. Is it possible to give too much? Yeah, to not have limits. Now, this could happen in a lot of different ways. You could be the kind of person who gets taken advantage of by other people. Is that going to be good for you? I mean, when you're virtuous, that's not only good for other people, that's good for you. If you're unable to say no to people who ask you for money, if you have no limits on how much you're willing to give, you're going to be broke pretty soon, aren't you? And then you won't be able to give. Then you'll be over here. You'll oscillate back and forth. Are there other things that could come? Are there some people that you shouldn't give to? Are there some people who are more deserving of your time, your affection, your money, your resources? Yeah.
It's really hard to gauge because then you have to take into account like other people's like, virtues and vices.
Oh, interesting.
If you're generous enough and someone's not honest enough,
yeah.
They just play off each other and it's hard to
do. Yeah. I mean, the fact that you're virtuous doesn't mean that everybody will automatically respond and become virtuous around you. You're right. There could be cases where you're doing the right thing. You're doing the virtuous thing, but it goes awry because of that. But if you know that somebody, for instance, has a gambling problem and they're at the casino, don't give them any money. If you can get a hold of their credit cards, take their credit cards too. That would be part of being a good friend, virtue friendliness. Aristotle says that generosity should be carried out not only with the right amount, but towards the right people and given for the right reasons. It shouldn't just be given, you know, willy-nilly for any reason whatsoever. Because if you're doing that, you may be doing it for bad reasons, like trying to be a big shot or just trying to get people to like you. That's not a particularly good reason to give things away. I mean, for this, you give because you recognize the real need. You're doing something good for other people and for yourself in the process. Reason has to determine that. Is this something that you can decide ahead of time so we could come up with some number, you know, maybe some table and chart? Okay, the homeless person on the street gets, let me flip it to this page, they get, okay, $2. My friend who's in this case here, I can help them out with anywhere between 10 and 50 bucks. Okay, at least 2 times a month, but not more. Now, it doesn't work like that, does it? You can't summarize it like that. You have to actually reason out what the mean position is. And now we noticed that it's not just a matter of amount. There's towards the right person and for the right reasons. Are there any other important qualifiers that would come in there? Aristotle says also in the right way. Let's think about being generous again. Let's say you're giving the right amount of money. Let's say it's, you know, charity. You're giving the right amount of money to the right people. Is it possible to do it in a way that is in some way wrong? That changes the nature of the act. Yeah.
You're giving away stolen money.
I didn't think of that, but that's a good one. Yeah, if you just steal a bunch of money so that you can give it away. That would fit. I had in mind something like, you know, you're really mean when you're giving it away to the person. You know, you're like trying to make them feel bad. Imagine working in a soup kitchen where you try to shame people. You know? We're helping you out here, dirtbag. You know, something like that. Aristotle would say, you're totally undermining the generosity there. Yeah.
The story that sticks out in my mind is a story my dad told me when he was a kid and like his grandparents didn't go to church and they recommended that you get 10% of your weekly
income. Oh, tithing, yeah.
And my great-great-grandfather, I guess, yelled out, what's 10% of nothing? So, I mean...
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing, too. Aristotle would... What would he say about cases where you don't have any resources? Does that automatically mean that you're over here? You're automatically giving too little?
Well, no, I think you can give instead of money.
Yeah, you can give time, you can give Socrates says you can give praise. I think, you know, some of this could actually be based on what you would be giving, what your character would be if you actually had the means. The things with the mean, you notice there's a lot of different qualifiers. There's a few other things that Aristotle says that are particularly important when it comes to the mean. Let's say in this case we take courage as a good example. What are you trying to manage when it comes to courage? There's actions involved, but it's primarily emotions. What's the main emotion here? Just shout it out.
Fear.
Fear, right. You're also concerned with, he says, confidence. And I think all of you have experienced that emotion. That's, you can have fear and confidence at the same time. Like, you remember maybe the first time that you got up the guts to call somebody on the phone who you had a crush on, and you're kind of nervous, right? So there's the fear. And yet at the same time, like, there's that, there's like an adventure is happening. And you know, you feel okay at the same time. You're having mixed feelings. That's fear and confidence. Or, you know, you go into a job interview. Job interviews are scary, aren't they? But you can also be confident at the same time. So you can have these two. They're kind of opposites, but they don't necessarily cancel each other out. When it comes to fear, can you have too much fear for a given thing? Yeah. I mean, if I walk in here and I say, well, pop quiz, and this is going to count for 3 points out of 800 in your grade. So you better do good on that, and you're like, oh my God, the world is ending, you know. Well, that's too much fear, right? Can you not feel enough fear? Yeah, there's some people who, you know, there's some cases where you really ought to be afraid. I was giving the example in the other class. Let's say you're walking down a dark alley, and let's say now you are a little bit older, and you have a five-year-old child with you, and it's at night, and you're walking to the car. You were out in the town for something, and your car is in an alley, and you're walking down the alley, and it's kind of creepy. And suddenly, three big guys start walking towards you. Should you feel fear? Yeah. And if you don't feel fear for yourself, you should feel some fear for the kid that you've got with you. And if you don't, then you're not virtuous, Aristotle would say. You're actually at the other extreme, which is being foolhardy. There are people who are, you know, they're willing to run all sorts of risks, not because they're actually courageous, but because they just don't care. They'll do anything. Well, that's not rational. That's not good. Now, here's the one thing I want to point out about this. Which of those would be closer to the mean? Would cowardice be closer to the mean, or would foolhardiness be closer to the mean? Which one looks more like courage? Foolhardiness, right. And you know why it looks more like courage? Because it actually is closer to courage. So sometimes the mean can slide a bit. If that's the case, that will mean that it takes more work to get from cowardice to courage than it will from foolhardiness to courage. There's one other thing that Aristotle advises, and that's knowing your own, you know, propensities and weakness. When it comes to foolhardiness and courage and all that sort of stuff, I don't know that I'm actually courageous. I'm maybe somewhere over here. I don't have to worry that much about this end, which means that I need to work on this part over here. I need to steer myself further this way. Same thing with anger. Somewhere in here, right? Not over all the way here where I used to be, thank God, but about here. So that means that I need to steer myself this way. I need to pay attention to the things over here. I need to figure out how to use reason, how to use good models to get myself over to this mean. And I have to really watch mistaking what I'm doing over here as if I'm actually at the virtue of it. Because, you know, anger is a good example of this. Is it easy to think that you got legitimate reasons for being as angry as you are, even though you don't? Is it easy to fool yourself? It sure is. And then you wind up over here. If you do it too much, you get stuck over here. You want to get stuck here. That's the goal of the virtue ethic. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.